Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
I just think she's incredible in it, and there's just so much going on. And I don't know, maybe if you've like, you want to watch this great film and you've kind of like got some woman anger or like woman energy, then this is kind of the film to sort of get it out with.
Towards the end, it's like a brewing storm.
Yeah.
Like you'd be really frustrated at first.
I was like call and response to the screen being like, I can't believe he's done that. But I was like, I'm on my own watching The Wife. Wow.
Shut up, honey.
Yeah, literally.
Hello, film fans. Joining FlixWatcher in the studio today, we have Becky.
Hello.
Honey.
Hi.
And as always, Kobe.
Hello.
And we're reviewing The Wife.
Thank you, as always, to the mighty people for the mighty, mighty tunes. And thanks to Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills.
Please do remember to write a review and rate us on Apple Podcasts, anywhere you can do where you listen to the podcast, because it really does help us.
And you can join in the conversation with us on Twitter
at FlixWatcherPod and on Instagram
at FlixWatcher.
Hello and welcome to this episode of FlixWatcher. Joining us today, we have Becky and Honey. If you would like to say hello and tell our listeners a little bit more about who you are and what you do, please.
Hi, that was very, very coy. I am Honey Ross. I am one of the co-founders of the Pink Protest, which is an activist collective, and we've changed two laws in the last 3 years, one of which was getting FGM added to the Children's Act, and the other was changing the laws around period poverty.
Can you explain what FGM being added to the Children's Act is?
Okay, so FGM is female genital mutilation. This is not going to be a very cheery part of the podcast, I'll be honest. Basically, the Children's Act is when teachers and people who are in loco parentis are allowed to intervene if they see something going on. And previously, before that, FGM wasn't considered something that you could intervene with. You'd be like, none of my business.
Yeah.
So it's now been added to the Children's Act, so now you can.
Which is fair enough, I think.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. It's crazy kind of shocking it wasn't on there already.
Yeah.
And you guys do a fair few podcasts.
Yes, we also now are a kind of podcast production company. So we have my own podcast, which is called The Body Protest, which I host with the most incredible angel, Nadia Craddock, who is a body image researcher and just a cherub, just a wonderful woman. And we kind of talk to a lot of people who are kind of disruptors in kind of the world of body image. Mm-hmm. Like Becky, for example. Actually, you haven't been on yet.
No, but I would too.
This season, you're coming on.
We've had a few cross-podcast invites, haven't we?
It's lovely. Cross-pod pollination.
Oh, yeah. That's lovely. And then we also do a lovely parenting podcast with Matilda Sturridge, and then Scarlett Curtis does Feminist Don't Wear Pink podcast, and Grace Campbell does a very funny podcast with her dad. So we're just having a good time over here.
Why not? Podcasting is a great time. And who are you?
I am Becky Young. I am the founder of Anti-Diet Riot Club. We are a community social enterprise platform that is fighting back against diet culture and all of the sort of dangerous body and beauty ideals that comes with that, including fat phobia and shame around bodies and sex and pleasure and food and exercise. And we host events and workshops like life drawing that Honey has been a model for, boob printing, gratitude workshops. We do sort of like interactive talks that explain what diet culture is and how to be an ally towards people who are fat or who've been in the kind of diet cycles. And we had just hosted our own first festival called Anti-Diet Riot Fest.
So tell us about the festival. So you had multiple stages, headliners?
We had 3.5 rooms, 30 different speakers, and like 10 workshop facilitators. Speakers including Erica Hart, who we brought over from New York, who was absolutely incredible, and honey modeled for our life drawing. We had Stephanie Yeboah hosting a panel on race matters and body positivity. We had content around fitness and parenthood as well, and as well as dance classes, craft workshops, like really interactive kind of intimate workshops on health and identity. So yeah, it was pretty broad.
It was amazing.
It was 9 hours of chaos for me, but I think a lot of other people enjoyed it. and we are going on tour in March. So we have, at the moment, have been doing mainly our events in London and a few workshops at festivals. Now we want to take the Anti-Diet Right bus, which we crowdfunded for last year, to as far and wide as possible around the UK. So, because obviously people don't struggle with their bodies in London.
Sure.
So.
Where are some key stop-off points for the...
So we're heading to Sheffield and Leeds first.
Yorkshire.
And then we'll be going to the East Anglia as well.
Not got a tune for them.
And then we'll definitely be going to Bristol, the Brighton and Devon. Mm-hmm. Those are kind of confirmed. We'd also have plans to go to Dublin, to Glasgow and Edinburgh, maybe for the Fringe if we can. And
Pink Protest were at the Fringe last year, weren't they?
Yeah, we were at the Fringe last year. Yeah,
I know Grace was.
So we had Grace's show, and the year before we did an event with Help Refugees.
Amazing. Which was, you can help us.
Yeah, absolutely.
If anyone's listening and you have links to local councils, community groups, event spaces, co-working spaces, we will go anywhere.
I noticed Manchester's not on that list yet.
We definitely want to go there.
Manchester.
We haven't had a link. We did a shout out yesterday for all the places that people want us to go.
Sure.
And Bristol, Manchester, and the Republic of Ireland did come up quite a few times. So we're definitely trying to go where we can.
Yeah.
But we need links. We need help. Support us.
So we are talking today about The Wife, which is your choice, Becky.
It was my choice.
So can you tell us why you chose it and a synopsis in 2 minutes or less? So
I chose it because I wanted to watch something that I hadn't seen that was a big sort of, sort of Oscar-worthy movie on Netflix that was new. I felt like it would have been added quite recently. And I wanted it to be about women or about with having a female protagonist. And I'm really glad I chose it because I thought it was a really great film. It's about a wife of a Nobel Prize winning writer. And she's obviously kind of... She's pitted as this kind of, you know... supporting, loving, nurturing wife who's sort of not really credited for all the help and support that she's given her husband. And he gets given the Nobel Prize for Literature, and they go to Sweden, and she sort of starts to reflect on her life and her career and how she's kind of subjugated her own career for his glory. But there's a big twist, which I didn't know about. Not a twist, but you know, there's this
story develops.
This like deep secret is unearthed, and it becomes a lot more than that. And yeah, it's pretty amazing. Her performance, I thought.
Helen, thoughts on The Wife?
So I'd seen this before. It came to Netflix, I think, kind of middle to late of last year, and I missed it at the cinema. And as soon as I saw it come on, I was like, I really want to watch this. I think this film is really, really good. Glenn Close in it is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. There's just so many moments in this film where you just like the way to kind of imagine, if you haven't seen it. So you know the bit in Love Actually with Emma Thompson
crying?
Yes.
Oh my god!
It's like iconic. That for the whole film.
Yes, this so is true.
That kind of emotion.
And that's such a good way of explaining
spot
it.
Spot on.
And the story itself is not kind of new or anything, but the way that she plays it and the relationship she has with her husband, Jonathan Price, and the relationship with her son, and Christian Slater pops up. He's there as kind of this...
he's there dancing around,
journalist,
isn't he?
Yeah, in there.
Slimy little journo.
And it's just it's sort of set over like maybe 2 days, 3 days, if that. So it's this very, very short period of time where just kind of who she is, who he is, the role of a mother, the role of a writer, the role of a female writer is all kind of explored in this really in-depth way. And it's absolutely fascinating to watch. And as things start to fall apart and cracks start to appear. So it is really fascinating.
Honey, what were your thoughts on...
I really liked it.
Have you seen this before?
I hadn't seen it before, but it had been on my list.
Had anyone seen this before? Oh, so you saw it before, yeah?
Yeah, but I missed it at the cinema, and I remember seeing the trailers for it, thinking, this looks good, this looks really good. Mm. I missed it. But I caught it when it came to Netflix.
I kind of liked that it was also a little bit hammy. Like, it was so, the emotions were so, like, raw and surface, and you're like, wow, like, Glenn Close is like screaming in a gown. I'm like, I love the drama. But no, I just really thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought she just, you know, it's such a shame she didn't win the Oscar for this, really.
Did you know what the plot was before you watched it?
I had no idea. Mm. I knew it was something about a kind of slightly scorned woman, but I didn't know the ins and outs of the Nobel plot, which I loved. And I loved the kind of claustrophobia of it being set over those 3 days. Mm. I thought it was really powerful of being like, that feeling of when you're basically on a holiday you don't want to be on is so nightmarish. They really captured that, and also captured the horror of actually writing and how unpleasant being a writer is. So I was like, you know what? Thanks, guys. You're doing the Lord's work.
Yeah. I thought that was actually interesting, that little insight into what winning the Nobel Prize is like.
Yeah.
The kind of tradition
pomp
around
and
it. And
yeah,
everyone like bowing down to you, and like when they come into the room. And
he couldn't even get that right, could he?
And they serenade them.
Yeah. And what it's like for the wives as well.
Well, yeah, well, it was very first lady-esque, isn't it? It's like, oh, so your husband will be very busy at the moment, and I'll take you shopping, and, you know, we can go do beautifying. She's like, yeah, okay, we'll see. Yeah.
And when he gives his speech at the big Nobel thing, and watching it, is watching Glenn Close at that moment when she was robbed of her Oscar, that it was almost like kind of like this imitation that is exactly, it's probably how she kind of felt on that night. When I mean, I love Olivia Colman, but
was that the year that Olivia Colman won?
Wow. It's really unfortunate.
It was Glenn's, I think.
And Glenn wore this big golden dress because she was like, I'm going to win in this dress. And then she didn't win in the dress.
Oh, my God.
You're just like, I'd be like, burn the dress. Just burn it. I don't ever want to see that dress again.
Yeah, we're going now.
I did love Olivia Colman's performance in The Favourite. So I hadn't watched The Wife when she won that Oscar, so I thought that was really deserved. But I've now rewatched The Wife because I watched it twice, because I think once you know, like, I mean, what are we going to do about this spoilers?
We can spoil.
Okay, because the fact, you know, the way in which it's revealed that she's actually the genius and he is a pathetic excuse for a person, whereas you know, it's a bit more complicated before that. I had to go back and rewatch all those bits at the beginning where she's, you know, the first scene where they are on the phone and her eyes, her like incredible eyes are just like, so, and I usually thought, wow, she's really involved in his work, and that obviously has been there throughout and supported him. And then she's receiving that award. She wins, she's winning the Emmy. She's like, I fucking just won a fucking Nobel Prize. And you're like, yeah, you did. Like, that's yours. I had to read like those painful scenes of her eyes and her catching everything and being called not a writer. And like, you know, in front of all the other male prize winners.
Mother Teresa won the Nobel Peace Prize.
But no, there have been winners.
Marie Curie, I'm sure, won.
And recent, like, sort of science-based
Someone won literature a couple of years ago. Doris Lessing won for literature.
In this one, they're all men.
Which further compounds it.
Yeah, it really was painful.
Yeah, like all of these white men, and you're like, oh Glenn Close has to just watch.
Yeah.
There was a Southeast Asian chap.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Throw him in there.
Just to.
Good for him.
I think watching it again really would be something I'd advise as well, because you get her spectacular acting put on display again. And it just adds a whole new element, because you just know the pain that she must be in. But then again, when I first watched it, I was like really annoyed that she wasn't speaking a lot.
Yeah.
And I was actually interested whether it passed that test, you know, like how many lines she had.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I kind of was really frustrated by it being like, she's the scorned wife, and, you know, everyone talking about her as, you know, in Swedish, oh, this is the wife of Mr. Castleman. Mm. And I found it really annoying. And then it makes sense, you know, towards the end of the movie when you realise she's obviously, she chose in a way to live her career through him, And then you wonder why. Like, would she? Would you have subjugated your whole career for that? But then women do.
But at the point at which you get the Nobel Prize, I was like, nah, I would have left him now.
That is fraud, and I'm sure it'd be illegal or something. Well, I'm sure they'd both be like in absolute scandal if they were to reveal that.
Well, that's why she doesn't want anything said, isn't it? Because
it could lead in that direction.
Yeah.
So did anyone kind of guess the plot from early on in there?
Yes, no. I did.
About 5 minutes in.
Yeah. I thought it was about her life living in his shadow, which it is. Mm. But I just thought it was like, you know, they always, let's say they're doing a film about someone who won the Nobel Prize. I'd be like, oh, it's so interesting. They're showing the wife. What's it like to be the wife of someone who's amazing? Why, you know, behind every great man is a great woman. That quote, that's where I thought it came from. I didn't realise that she would, it wasn't until she has that sort of drink with
Christian Slater.
I think it was the first flashback that I was like, of course, he was like, you're a very promising young writer. I was so she's written everything he's done.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
I thought even at the point when they were jumping on the bed right at the start, when it was like, I've won a Nobel,
and she goes,
okay, yeah, I was like, yeah, I've had enough now.
And I was like, there's something going on here. That scene was so weird. I'm like, this is the most random writing choice. Why are they doing that? And then it flashes back to when
that's the difference there. And that's such a, because, I mean, does he have any redeeming features? Because I can kind of understand, given the time decade they were in, that maybe if she was put forward as Mrs. Castle, Joan Castle, Castleman, sorry, that her success wouldn't have been as great as her. So to put it through his name to ensure they get some success, I can kind of understand that plan. But I would have, for him to have some humility about it.
He was such a narcissist.
Yeah. Like, cheating on her and just like... And just like not even paying her any attention whilst they were in Sweden because of the work that she'd done all their lives together. It's just like, dude, what are you,
and
what
how
are you doing?
How dare he treat his son like that? It being quite clear that he had no talent, apart from his ideas. But it kind of seemed like actually when they have that fight, all of his ideas came from his... treating her like shit. And it was actually her ideas. And even though she was like privileged and, you know, whatever, she had all of the good stuff.
I would have loved if they felt like after 20 years of doing this, they came out together and said, no, we're a wife and husband writing couple. He comes with the ideas and I build it together. Like, you have couple directors, don't you?
Yeah.
So I would have loved it if they said, we did this because no one would take me seriously as a sole writer, so we had to do it this way. And hopefully that would have uncovered kind of thing.
And kind of risk then that you don't have backlash. Anything taken seriously and people kind of go back and then start to unpick things.
You get used to
things,
so you get used to that life, don't you?
Yeah.
It's important.
just that. I mean, it is part of the time, and they kind of go into it saying that, you know, you've got the big ideas, but I'm the writer, and, you know, the lifestyle kind of seemed to have sort of suited them in that she gets to kind of have the life that she sort of wants. She gets to write without anyone criticizing her as well. You know, she has this family that she loves and adores.
And she doesn't like the spotlight. She's, you know, that's one of the only reasons why I can see why she wouldn't go into it, apart from that one female writer saying, oh, no one will ever read you.
Does she actually say she doesn't like the spotlight, or she just seems quite
shy, and her personality is quite drab. Like, from the beginning, she's kind of like, yeah, well, I'm like, they're trying to portray her as this kind of not very shining, whereas he's so charismatic and makes everyone laugh. And she's
not into small talk, and she's not into pleasing people.
Yeah, exactly.
She's just into kind of words and writing what sounded like the most amazing books ever.
Yeah, and also maybe that is part of being a successful writer, you know, being able to schmooze. And sadly, maybe a lot of writers feel like they have to live that over that time.
I guess you have to personally brand yourself and be a character. It's not enough to just be a talent. Well, I think that's what was so, I loved the kind of nuance of, like you said, the relationship with the son and the dad, which was so brilliant, because the dad clearly felt so threatened by the son's talent, whereas Glenn Close, who was actually the writer, like, I think he's got a lot of promise. Like, he's very talented.
I read your work. It was very beautiful.
Yeah. But he just couldn't say, like, we'll
and
talk
he
about
couldn't
later.
Stomach well, it. It was the ego. It was the male ego.
What does my dad say? Which I thought was also harsh, because
Oh, he totally just disregarded her opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah, the son was a dick as well.
And she was like, yeah.
But he kind of works it out, doesn't he, from his sort of his childhood memories. And that's Jeremy Irons' son.
Yeah, Max.
Max Irons.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
No, but didn't Christian Slater tell him?
Yeah, Christian Slater tells him.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then he has that thing about, like, why you're shutting the door, which he's kind of seen in the flashback thing, which you would remember as a child.
You don't even remember your own character's name.
Yeah.
That was
amazing.
Yeah, that was really good. His anger and that whole scene where he explodes, like, God, it really is such a massive, like, you kept my mum a slave. You enslaved my mum. But also that, you know, she very much tries not to be the victim even until the very end. She's like, I will not be that woman. I'm more interesting than that.
She's a kingmaker.
Yeah. She's a kingmaker, yeah.
What's
to the
job?
King of Sweden. Yeah. That's what she says.
Huge energy.
Yeah. And then at the end when she's like caressing the blank page, obviously going to go off and write her own things. I thought that was quite cool.
Yeah, I liked that a lot.
I would have hoped that she would have been taken seriously at this point though.
Yeah, I mean, you would have thought that if she came out with something that they'd sort of figure out. he's conveniently died, and that was very similar kind of prose.
And more still keeps on coming out, more and more.
Yeah.
But I mean, J.K. Rowling still, she had the initials J.K. instead of Joanne Rowling because...
For a reason.
Yeah, for that reason. It's still sad that that happens. E.L. Travers, P.L. Travers, whoever wrote the Peter Pan... No, that was J.M. Barrie as a guy.
you wonder how many kind of films and TV programs by women just don't get it past the door to be made or discussed or anything just because they're like, oh, well, no one's going to watch a TV series that's been written by a woman or, you know, where's the audience for that?
Well, most of the Bronte's novels were originally published under a male pseudonym. And also because, I remember someone told me this and it made my blood actually boil, was... I'd read To Kill a Mockingbird because I was 14 and obviously you have to. And someone had been like, you know, Harper Lee didn't actually write To Kill a Mockingbird. It was Truman Capote because they were best friends. And it's like, no, sorry. Like, just because she has a talented male friend doesn't mean he wrote her masterpiece. But that happens all the time in writing. People believe that women can't be interesting, basically.
Yeah, and it used to be really common to write under pseudonyms and everything. One, I read a review about The Wife, which was like, it's just not believable that a woman so talented and like so powerfully played as Glenn Close would give up her life and not chase the glory. And I was like, women do it all the time.
Yeah.
And women play that wife role all the time. Like my own family members, like they go into relationships and they become this like shell of themselves. And you see it all the time. And so I felt like you just don't get it.
Yeah.
Like I can imagine that this, maybe not so elaborate, like a Nobel Prize winner wouldn't go up, wouldn't have the audacity to go up on stage and collect a prize. I couldn't believe it.
Do you think he should have rejected it?
Yeah. I mean, you know, she was obviously in pain as well.
Yeah, it's like you're a dick, basically.
You get nominated, amazing, but like for him to stand up there and accept it.
Jump on the bed saying, I won a Nobel. I won a Nobel.
Like, you did nothing, you edited it. That's what she says. And it obviously wasn't, she obviously didn't feel by the end that it was a collaboration.
No.
She obviously felt like it was hers.
And that's the thing, it's the collaboration. I think, going back to that humility thing, if he had just at least through their relationship said, look, obviously, as it was presented in the film, you are the tour de force behind this. But we are doing this because it gives us both a better life.
Yeah.
And I will not be up there. I'll do the schmoozing I need to do to make sure we get the next books and do the press tours.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to present my walnut to random women. I'm not going to be there accepting a prize on my own behalf saying it was only me and I was the only person. You know, it's that kind of thing where you think you're onto something good here. And I was, you know, I was quite happy with that kind of con. There's a Tim Burton film called Big Eyes. Have you seen it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's based on a similar thing where that's a true story where the artist, she's got a lot of talent, but at the time, she's a lady, so she can't make these interesting
things. She's a lady writer.
she can't make these fantastic drawings, so they put it to change.
So Christoph Waltz pretends to be the person painting them.
I
watched it at Christmas very drunk.
Yeah. So that does happen in these kind of circles. Definitely. And it's just kind of sad that it does. I think she kind of stepped out of the shadows, didn't she?
So they had, at the end of that, they had an amazing paint off where he didn't turn up and she did, and she painted one, and everyone's like, okay, yeah, it's you. Yeah. Fair enough. So a lovely happy ending with that one, but which isn't always the case.
What was it? There was a bit where, where she asks him not to mention her, and then he obviously goes on and on about how much he loves her, and it just, that was so painful to watch her, like, I thought she was going to punch someone.
What a performance.
I know, it was amazing.
Should we head to scores, guys?
Hello, I'm Sam Pay.
And I'm Martin Zotz-Austwick.
And together we host a show called Song by Song, where we deal with the music of Tom Waits. We've been going since 2015. Every week we talk about a new track. We've made our way through 15 seasons so far of his music.
And now we're going back to the early years. And if you haven't listened to Tom Waits before, it's not the growly stuff. It's not the stuff where he's hitting an automobile with a bone for percussion. It's a nice, easy way into his music.
If that sounds like something you would be interested in, you should check out our website, songbysongpodcast.com, or put Song by Song into your podcatcher of choice.
Let's head over to the FlixWatcher scores. Our scores are all out of five. You may have decimal places if you wish. And we will start with you, Becky, with your recommendability, please.
I would say, I would say a five. I would recommend it to people, everyone. Actually, there are some people that I wouldn't recommend it to just because I maybe would assume that they wouldn't watch it. But that's with anything.
No action or...
Certain...
It's not Transformers.
But pretty much everyone, I think, would get something from it. And I think if you recommend something, you always recommend within a context of knowing them anyway. So, I would recommend it, say five.
Still going five. Honey?
I would recommend it. I would say maybe a 4.5 for me.
Sure.
Because I would... It's the same thing. I probably wouldn't recommend it to absolutely everyone. I wouldn't recommend it to my brother, but I'd probably recommend it to most of my friends, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. Helen?
I'm going to give this one a 4.7. I mean, I think this film is fantastic, but I think there will be people who will go in and say, oh, it's just not believable. Or they won't, they'll see, because the kind of, the story is a bit cliched, and it's not kind of like a massive twist or an, but
you,
I
saw it coming,
or I kind of,
but I'm so naive.
I kind of knew what the story vaguely was before going into it, so it wasn't like I foresaw every element of it. I was like, there's kind of something going on here, but it is about the performance, and there's just a lot going on to it, but there will be a lot of people out there who just won't even give it a chance, which I think is a shame.
I'm going to join you on the 4.7. I think it's quite easy to recommend with a few caveats. It's a bit slow for some people. But I think the performances are there. And it's interesting seeing Jonathan Pryce just playing such an unlikable, he's playing it very well, an unlikable character. I was like, fair enough. And Glenn Close railing against that in a demure way to start off with, but towards the end where you have the proper fight, which had me, when couples argue properly on cinema, in film it's tough, like in some of the Before trilogies where I see some of the arguments in that, really had me like, oh, I can't watch this. But she was awesome in it, so I'm going to join in 4.7. But some people wouldn't like it.
No, it's an interesting one. I don't think many people kind of have seen it. I don't know what it is. Maybe the title is kind of
a bit innocuous, isn't it?
A little bit, but then it's also the other way that it's, she's the wife. Mm. But some people might be, oh, she's just the wife.
So it's about, women's things.
Yeah.
I think that I try to recommending these kind of things to like some of my brother or friends. I try and be like, even though it's like about a woman, that doesn't mean you're not interested, and a reminder that I will watch you know, movies about men all the time.
Yeah. Do you feel you have to caveat it that I know it's about all women?
Yeah, surprisingly. It's annoying, but you do.
When I watched Booksmart, I kept on being like, when I like was trying to make my family watch Booksmart, I was like, it's just like Superbad, but they're ladies, but don't worry about it.
Yeah.
And I was like, I hate that. I have to, because I'm like, actually, it's better than Superbad. Yeah. And I'm, you know, it's crazy that you have to even justify it like that because people can't seem to empathize with a human woman.
Yeah.
But, you know, say lovely.
I mean, a lot of the shots are just like her not saying anything though.
Yeah.
Just like zoomed in on her, like,
but it's such a mood. It's
her, like, her blinking sort of in face fury. And just smiling and like the sort of subtle looks that she gives and the way that she notices when he's flirting with people.
She knows about that walnut.
She knows about the walnut.
That was disgusting.
She knows about all of his indiscretions. And
that's another hard pill to swallow, isn't
it? Well, I think that's... Yeah, like,
I think so many marriages are like, especially that era when they kind of got together. I mean...
But obviously it hurt her because she used it against him. And, you know, he says, and I feel terrible about that. But, you know, obviously she knew. And it was just kind of so all-knowing. It was like, oh, here he goes again. Flirting with the air hostess from the off. Or like the photographer.
The photographer was so amazing because the way that was written was so genius because him nest egging it and being like, I'm not attracted to her. Yeah. And then him like giving her the walnut. And you were like, well, you seem attracted to her, sweetheart.
She was the other woman though.
The other woman?
Basically, she split his first marriage up.
The original.
I guess she's talking about the photographer. Yeah.
The position where
she's almost like, I did this to myself.
I think she thinks she doesn't deserve more.
Maybe.
Was the point that I was kind of getting of her being like, well, I knew what I was doing.
Yeah.
Which made me sad. I was like, Glenn, you deserve more than this.
Do you reckon the walnut trick would have worked on any of you guys or anything similar?
Now, when we call that the walnuts, it kind of sounds like his body parts.
Yeah.
Where we're like, he's giving out his walnuts. But when he was like scrambling around, it was like from something so endearing at the beginning that he obviously cracked and gave to students and then left in that drawer to the end. It's like
the desperation.
Trying to write on it. It's just like she doesn't even accept it. She's like, it's okay. Like, it's like, it's I don't horrible. Need you now. Yeah, it was so gross.
Repeat meme score, Becky.
I mean, I already watched it twice. So I would say actually quite high score because I think the second time around it throws a whole different light on it because you know what happens. Although if you listen to this, you now already know what happens.
So we do have, there's the kind of repeat viewing score where you can watch it anytime and you will watch it all the time.
But
there's also like the high repeat. Well, I think that it needs to be watched again so you can get more out of it. I don't think it needs to be watched again.
I would say watch it again, like with a friend or, you know, watch it another time without giving anything away. So I'd say 3.75.
Honey?
I really enjoyed it, but I don't know how much I would watch it again. Mm. I think I'd, if a friend asked me to watch it with them, I would. So probably a 3. But I don't think it necessarily... I don't think I'm gagging to watch it again.
Yeah, it's not like A Knight's Tale, which I could watch any day of the week.
Absolutely.
Yeah, someone tried to bring that on, but it was taken off Netflix before.
We didn't get to have that.
I would have done that.
Yeah.
That would have been me.
Helen.
So I initially thought, I was like, oh, I've seen it fairly recently. Maybe I don't need to watch it again. And then I went, you know what? I actually really want to watch it again. And I kind of had to rush the ending a little bit, but the rest of it, I really, really enjoyed re-watching it. And I don't know how much more you'd probably get, but I did really enjoy watching it again. I probably would watch it again as well, just because...
Pretty good.
Pretty solid.
I just think she's incredible in it, and there's just so much going on. And I don't know, maybe if you've like, you want to watch this great film and you've kind of like got some woman anger or like woman energy, then this is kind of the film to sort of get it out with.
Towards the end, it's like a brewing storm.
Like
you'd be really frustrated at first.
I was like call and response to the screen being like, I can't believe he's done that. But I was like, I'm on my own watching The Wife. Wow.
Shut up, honey.
Yeah, literally.
So I'm going to go 4 for this one.
All right. I'm going to give 2.5. I don't think I'll watch it that often. I will happily watch it again if someone says, if I'm in a place where someone hasn't watched it, then yeah, why not? But I don't think it'll be my go-to because I think mainly because I did kind of see it coming. So I was looking for all the clues to kind of
already
verify my thoughts as to what was coming on.
Yeah.
And it became more and more apparent as it went through. Like you said, honey, with the...
The flashback.
With the flashback to the, oh, you're a very good writer. Okay, yeah.
Did you kind of watch it then as a little bit more of a sort of a kind of mystery drama rather than just like a drama drama?
In what? You're looking for the clues to make it?
Yeah, were you trying to kind of like... be like trying to foresee what was coming kind of way rather than...
Yeah, well, I was just kind of... I mean, this was paying into the engagement because I thought, this is what's happened, but I don't know how it's going to play out and I couldn't work out. And one of the biggest things that was a really cool surprise or a really cool twist in it, way that it kind of transpired is that the books that she wrote were based on the shitty life that they had, not shitty quote unquote, but the life that they had had together. And I liked that
kind of... the books at him. This was based on you fucked the nanny. This is only based on that. That was amazing.
So that kind of thing, I was like, that's a really cool way to like, to play that out, which I hadn't anticipated. And I thought she was almost going to just take the award and then leave and say, yes, well done, hubby.
Did anyone think he was going to say it during his speech?
I thought, kind of did.
Yeah, I thought he was going to be like, this doesn't actually belong to me. That's what he says.
Yeah.
And then he just goes on to be like, it should be my wife's because she raised my kids or whatever.
What would you have thought if he'd done that? Because I was thinking that as well.
I mean, you can't accept a Nobel Prize and be like, it's not actually mine.
Yeah, I think there would be, be so much trouble.
Yeah.
It'd be super press with it, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would be.
Sales would go sky high.
Yeah.
I would almost be used like a tactic to like, okay, we've got a new book coming out.
Yeah.
I'd just like to say thank you for giving me the prize, but it was my wife that wrote all the books.
Hey!
Hello, Jody.
I think if that had happened, then I would have felt it would have been unbelievable.
That would have been so unbelievable.
That would have been too cheesy.
Yeah. The pain that she felt from being like him accepting it and, you know, giving her all these compliments and I love her and was way more realistic.
Yeah. I mean, it would have been a twist that...
Yeah, that
would have been... And then it would have been like a murder mystery thing where we kind of replay the scenes that we didn't see. Okay, when you go on a stage, all you got to do is like... And play it out like that. But it didn't. I'm going to go repeat... Yeah, so repeat viewing score 2.5. Small screen score.
Yeah, I think that it's very watchable on the small screen. I would say 5 again. I think that there are some annoying things in the way that we shot. Like, I really didn't like how they portrayed him eating.
Spilling his food down.
Yeah, and like, I mean, I hate that when they're like, that's a trope for like, he's an unlikable character because he eats.
Yeah.
And that's annoying. And like, but I really hate how they like amplified the sound of that to make that worse. So it was like, he was always eating chocolate and like
sweet things.
And I'm just being fat, I'm going to kill myself. Yeah. And like, all that kind of stuff is really irritating to me. And I think I get audio sensitivity when it comes to people eating, and because it was all around him being like the annoying character, that was the episode.
Well, it's called misophonia, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I don't have a problem with people eating in real life loudly.
No, it's just sound design.
When they design it like that to gross you out.
Yeah.
I don't find people eating that gross, but when people do it on screen, it's really like that way, that annoys me. So... That would be annoying on screen.
Small screen stuff.
I think there were some of the set pieces I think would have benefited from being on a bigger screen, but I still really enjoyed it. I think maybe like a 4.5.
All right. Helen?
Yeah, I'm going to go for a 4.5 on this one as well. I just had a really lovely time on my own watching this. Yeah, both times.
Would Reese not be interested in this?
I don't know, actually. He'd probably enjoy watching it, but I don't know. I just had a really lovely time on my own watching it. And the thing, I remember watching The Hours at the cinema and having a very emotional time watching that. And whether had I seen this in the cinema, it might have been a bit more like that experience. But I mean, cinematically, I don't think seeing it in the cinema would have had much of a difference. It's whether just kind of like watching it in a cinema full of kind of like women going, I know how you feel, and just kind of like having that.
I'm a kingmaker sort of, too.
Yeah, and just like some kind of like guilty men shuffling out at the end with like their wives like ignoring them and things like that. I don't know.
I'm going to go for 5 here as well. I remember coming out of the cinema and I even...
Oh, you watched it at the cinema?
No, I remember when it came out and I just thought, it doesn't look like I need to see this at the cinema. So I was quite happy to wait until Netflix, and I think I made the right choice.
Thank God for Netflix.
They didn't really make like Stockholm look that interesting.
Because they didn't really show it that much. No. Like one scene at the beginning. So, it was made by a Swedish director.
Yes.
Right, I think.
Someone Lunder. But
Björk.
Björk Lunder.
Yeah. That was his name.
Was it Björk Lunder? I'm going to check this out.
We were like,
maybe Bjorn.
Bjorn, like a baby Bjorn.
Bjorn, yeah.
But yeah, so I think I made the right choice by not watching it in the cinema. Although I was delayed in watching, which is the bad thing. I didn't get to see it as soon as possible. So but yeah, I'm going to go for 5. Engagement score, Becky.
I think for me, it was like a 4. I think I've seen more gripping things, but I didn't know what was going on. I knew what was going on, but I didn't know what the plot was going to be. I actually was still really interested, even thinking that, you know, she hadn't ghostwritten it and that it was just a portrayal of the sort of woman in the shadows. And I still really enjoyed it.
So the second time you watched it to get the clues in.
Yeah, so the second time it was all like all knowing, and that was why it was more interesting.
Was that engaging even more the second time? We're like, oh yeah, I could have figured it out then. Or
I just loved watching her scenes in the second time. So I actually kind of skipped over like the bits where he did the practice bowing and things. Because at first I thought that was very interesting. I was interested to know what happened. When you won a Nobel Prize.
I'd quite like to go to a ceremony.
Yeah, I mean they seem sort of quite grand. And then I was more looking for like the tortuous moments that Glenn Close was portraying, and the whole thing with the son. I found him a bit annoying the first time, and then I found, sort of sympathised with him more the second time. And yeah, I didn't actually get all the way to the end, but I think I might rewatch the end because I thought that was a really good scene.
As he dies. Did you believe it was happening that he died? It almost seemed a bit too convenient to me.
She basically killed him, right?
I mean, broke his heart. Coming, wasn't it?
Because of all the chocolate eating.
He said he had
a couple of bypasses.
And he wasn't taking his pills properly because she wasn't around.
Oh, yeah, okay. And
he has that dizzy spell at the practice thing.
Oh, of course. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, it was kind of building up to it. But I was like, oh, she just killed him. What a way. good for her.
So what's your score? Engagement score?
Oh, 4.
4. Honey?
I think I'm probably going to go for a... probably like, yeah, 4 as well, I reckon. I liked it. I was pretty engaged, but like Becky said, it wasn't the most gripping thing I've ever seen.
Slow.
It was very slow.
Helen?
Yeah, a 4 as well. I mean, I was super engaged in it, but there's some bits in it where you're a bit like, oh yeah, kind of went by, it's fine.
Yeah.
And then there's the bits with her in it are the bits where you kind of want to, just absorb every part of the performance to get all the emotions that she's got. And I kind of, I was like, when I was watching it, should I watch it for the second time? I was like, I can't remember if he dies or not. I think he does, but I can't remember 100%.
It's so almost like that's non-relevant.
Yeah. So it's that kind of engagement. Obviously the more you're engaged, the more you will get out of it. But it's not like, you know, if you, I don't know, go and make a cup of tea, you're not going to be like, oh my God, what's just happened?
Yeah. No.
I thought when they, after he died and they're on the plane, that seemed all kind of nonchalant. They didn't seem so distraught, her son and Glenn. They're just like, yeah, we're back on the Concorde.
Yeah, it was...
Heading home.
I imagine there would have been some kind of, it would have been quite emotional after it had happened. Mm. And they would have had to make kind of the plans.
And also be in shock.
And also when, obviously, they go back to, what could have been interesting was them sort of going back to see the daughter who just had the baby.
Yeah, without.
And kind of seeing that emotional, like they become like this family without the father there. And that could have been an interesting way to have ended it. But
honestly, I was interested about what was happening afterwards, which I don't mind in a film, to be like, so like, you know, did Nathaniel write the like sort of gossip piece on them? Did he figure out, because obviously she was like, I'll sue you if you write anything slanderous, but you know, she's obviously going to tell the kids, like, what were they going to be reacting? How does that change her dynamic? Like, I wanted to see her life afterwards.
I'd almost like this to have been a true story where you can like read up on it and go, well, what did happen?
Yeah.
But it wasn't.
Or the post credits. So yeah. Such did yeah, write yeah. that. And she won the Nobel Prize herself.
At least give you some kind of closure for it. Yeah.
Yeah, but a lot of films leave you on that kind of cliffhanger.
Mm-hmm. Which is kind of fair enough. It's a nice technique. I'm going to go for. Oh, fuck it. Let's go for four as well. because, yeah, I pegged it out for, I thought the story was going to play out and I just wanted to see how it played out. And I liked the way it wasn't so predictable in the narrative.
Yeah.
So all fours were engagement score. That gives us an overall score of 4.19688, which is
that's pretty fairly high,
tidy.
That is.
Yeah. It's pretty well said. Yeah. I reading the reviews, there were lots of people who were saying bad things about it.
Really?
Yeah, and I felt that...
Not in this studio.
Yeah. So I think this is more reflective of how it is. Yeah, people were kind of like picking apart the way that it was shot and the way that, you know, I think maybe it was the subject matter as well, was like the wife, who cares?
I think that's probably what didn't put the Oscar in Glenn's hand because it's solely about her performance, but there was nothing, I don't think anything else supporting the film was up to the scratch, whereas like the favourite, like there's a lot of things going on. It was like a really interesting,
three amazing characters, three amazing,
and it was hilarious and emotional.
It was shot really interestingly and had a really interesting plot on the other side. Well, I've never seen this kind of stuff before, so I think that's unfortunately what took it away from Glenn, even though she was great in it.
Could have been a on stage production as well, I reckon.
Oh yeah,
I think that could have worked, that will translate really
the wife.
Well.
Let's buy the rights, guys. Let's do it.
Let's go and see the wife, and then go and see Hamilton for the sixth time. It's quiet uptown. Okay, thank you very much, guys. Can you sign off by telling us where we can find you online on Instagram or Twitter if you have them?
You can find me on Instagram at HoneyKinney, or you can follow the Pink Protest at Pink Protest,
and you can follow me personally at @sloppy_spice on Instagram.
Should we ask? Should we not ask?
So in my friends, everyone gets a Spice Girl name or a dwarf name. So I'm Sloppy the Dwarf / Sloppy Spice. Because I don't know, slop about when I'm drunk. Anti-Diet Riot Club on Instagram and Anti-Diet Riot on Twitter if you're interested.
Cool. Thank you very much, guys.
Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Enjoyed this episode of FlixWatcher Podcast? Why not leave us a 5-star review on iTunes? You can also follow us at FlixWatcherPod on Twitter, and we're at FlixWatcher on Instagram. Thanks as always to the Mighty People for their mighty, mighty tunes, and Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills. If you're looking to get your podcast edited as sweet as this, get in touch with Ben, and that's Rockwood, R-O-K-K, Wood Audio. Tell them FlixWatcher sent you.
You just heard a Stripped Media production.